Welcome to Inner Life on KMUN 91.1 in Astoria. I'm Megan McFeely, your host. On the show, I'm trying to answer or offer insights of what it means to live from inside oneself. I've been exploring this territory for about 30 plus years, and I believe that the cure to all of our ills, and that means, you know, culturally and a world stage, is an inside job. And so I share this quote: "World peace must develop from inner peace. Peace comes from within. Do not seek it from without." And that's from His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. Today, my guest is Dylan Tweeney. He was raised in a small town in Ohio and currently lives in the San Francisco area, where he spent 20 plus years as a journalist covering technology, as a senior editor at Wired, and an editor-in-chief at VentureBeat magazine. I asked Dylan to come to the show because I know an interesting experience he had while swimming. He was living a normal life, going to work, taking care of his family, and he began swimming in the San Francisco Bay. Dylan, hi and welcome, and can you start to tell us that story?
Sure. Thanks for having me here, Megan. So it wasn't like a single lightning bolt for me. I guess I'm more the gradual path. But I had started swimming in the bay, as you mentioned, and the water's cold, and it's not particularly dangerous if you know how to swim, but you do have to pay attention to currents and what's going on around you, and occasionally you see wildlife like sea lions or seals. And I found it was like running, where it was a way of exercising for me that was suddenly put me in the middle of nature. But I was immersed in nature. I'm not trying to be funny about that, but I was immersed in the water and I was immersed in nature. And when you're swimming, it's also it's rhythmic motion. You're moving your arms in a rhythmic way. You're breathing very rhythmically. And I think that started to wake something up in me, an awareness of my body, but also an awareness of how my body was not really separate from the universe. Like, when you're floating there in the water, sometimes I'm just like a tourist looking at, like, wow, look at the sky, look at the water, look at the sunrise. But sometimes it goes beyond that to just like, I am just a part of this ocean. I'm just a little part floating in the ocean, and I'm not really all that different from it. I think that's where it kind of started for me.
I remember you called me. I don't know when it was, but you called me and you said something like this. I mean, it's not verbatim. You said, "I think something is happening to my consciousness. You know, I think I'm changing, and I just wanted to talk. You wanted to talk to me about it." And one thing I said, you had told me you were swimming, and I said, "I bet it's the swimming, because the breath is so important to awakening consciousness and meditation." Recently, I heard somebody say, "How do I deepen my meditation?" And the response is, you learn how to breathe properly, right? And that is one way in which people start to find out something else exists inside of them, or they exist inside something else, and there's this experience of oneness. So that happened to you, and then how did it affect your life?
Well, yeah, I mean, what you're saying about breathing is so true.
Yeah.
I had gone through, so I was not young at this point. I was, you know, approaching 50 and maybe in a little bit of a midlife crisis situation, wondering kind of what's next and where am I going and what am I supposed to do on this earth? And why am I so frustrated and angry at the way things are going right now? Yeah, just a lingering, you know, I've had a great life, Megan, but I had this feeling of frustration and disappointment. Like, it was supposed to be better. Like, when does it get good? When do I get everything that I was promised?
Right.
And it wasn't like I was dealing with anything crummy. It wasn't, I mean, I had the normal struggles of being a dad, but what happened is I think, I'd been through different periods in my life where I was thinking, I need to meditate. And I would meditate for a little while and then I would fall out of the habit. And then 5 or 10 years would go by and I'd come back, I need to meditate. Well, what happened with the swimming was I just decided, okay, maybe swimming is my meditation. And so I just did swimming meditation for a while. And then I started to realize I needed a little bit more and I was ready for a little bit more, but I couldn't do it on my own. So I started reaching out to other people. I reached out to you to have a conversation. I reached out to another friend who also kind of has gone through a big spiritual awakening. And I asked her for advice. And then I started trying to find groups of people who were meditating and on the path together. And what that led me to a Buddhist sangha, a community. And that was really the key for me to be able to start meditating regularly, like meditating by sitting. But it really started with the swimming.
I have a question. You know that feeling of dissatisfaction? Would you describe that as a longing? Something inside you knew there was something else. And there was this desire to find it. I mean, it might not have been conscious, but would you say maybe that that was a longing?
Yeah, I think longing is a good word. I wouldn't have described it that way at the time. It manifested as frustration and irritability. I was probably drinking too much. I got angry at my wife. I got angry at my kids. But underneath it, there was a feeling of like, is this it? Is this it? Life is just going by, and is this it?
I had that experience, and I would get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and I was sitting on the toilet going, "Are you kidding me? This is it?" I mean, I get up and pee every night. That's it. And it seems to me that that there is this question that is such a deep question that comes with this awakening thing, which is that it? You know, I've had other people say that, and it always has to do with some kind of question I've noticed. Everybody's question's different. Mine was similar to yours, but then there were more down the road. But so tell me, how did your family? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say the funny thing, just to close the loop on that, a few years later, after I'd gotten more into the Buddhist tradition, the Plum Village tradition started by Thich Nhat Hanh, I went to a monastery in Southern California in this tradition. It's called Deer Park. And I went into the meditation hall, and at the time, they had this big sign at the altar written in the beautiful calligraphy and the style of Thich Nhat Hanh, this beautiful calligraphy. And it said, "This is it." And
And
I
you're
was like,
like,
oh, I was in tears, Megan, because I
yeah.
had felt like I arrived at home.
Yes, I get
And
it.
finally, this is it. I was there, but it took a while to get
But
there.
it wasn't it either, was it?
No.
It was like,
No.
I take that as saying, this is all it is, you know? Like if I saw that sign, I go, this is all it is. And so accept what is, because I think that's also part of an awakening is just accepting life as it is. And that might be the way I would look at it. But I wanted to get back to your family and your friends and, you know, your relationships and how this new awareness had an impact on those.
So first of all, I called my friend Megan, and one of the things that I remember clearly her telling me is be careful about how you talk about this with other people because you're in a really early stage. And you said you need to be careful who you share this with because it's delicate. And I knew that.
You knew
So
that.
I
Great.
knew that. So it wasn't that I was hiding it from my family, but my family, my immediate family, that my parents who raised me are very rationalist. My wife is a very my dad was a scientist, right? My wife is very non-religious, even maybe anti-religious. and comes from a non-religious family, and religion or spirituality has never been a major topic of discussion. So I was very, I knew I could talk about meditation and meditating with people, but I wasn't ready to talk about a deeper inner life or spirituality or what that means until later. But I think, and even now, the way I talk about spirituality, I think I'm very conscious that I'm kind of woo now. I can't get away from that. I am a Buddhist. But I try to find ways of talking about it that aren't too out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, of course. I know what you mean, but I also, I don't think of Buddhism as woo-woo either. I don't. I
No,
think
no,
that,
no. I mean, I'm
but to
just a
other
regular.
people.
Like, I think of it in terms of being like this regular kind of nerdy white guy from Ohio, right? When I go back to Ohio, yeah, I'm a little odd. But out here in California, where it's like, whatever, Buddhism is just another thing.
It is.
But I think to go back to my family, I think I didn't talk about it, but I think they saw the changes. And I will say, getting involved with the Buddhist community was really helpful for me, because one part of that, there's a big emphasis on the five precepts. So not killing, not stealing, no sexual misconduct, not lying, and not consuming toxins. And so not consuming toxins, I was like, when I first heard these, I was like, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. I like drinking wine.
Can you drink coffee?
Yeah, I drink coffee. I don't, and tea. I've got a cup of tea right here. I don't think that counts as a toxin, at least for most of us. But I eventually came around. I'm like, okay, let me try it out. Let me try not drinking. And that was a big change, actually. My kids really noticed it. My kids and my family noticed my meditation practice. They noticed the effects of me hanging out with the Sangha, and they really noticed me not drinking. Because even though I don't think I was like, well, now I'm going to contradict myself. I don't think I was an angry alcoholic, but I was just saying I was drinking too much, and I was being really irritable and angry, Megan.
Well, I wouldn't see you that like that, but I understand
But they
your
noticed the difference. They were
right.
like,
That's
oh,
right.
you're much more chill. You're not so irritable. And I found my mind was clearer, and I was way more present for my family. And I found that, over the years that I've been doing this, that I stopped being like, when we got into conflicts in the family, especially with multiple people, there's a way in which like my anger feeds your anger and your anger feeds my anger. And suddenly there's like anger in the group of us that's almost like a third or fourth or fifth person.
It's an entity,
It's its own entity and it gets out of control. I stopped feeding into that as much, and I became more of like a calm person, more able to help wind things down.
I was gonna say something about family, I told people everything.
Of course you did.
I'm an extrovert, and I was like, you cannot believe what's happening to me, right? But I regret it because, number one, I had to learn the hard way how sharing sacred experience or insights, if you share them too early, they kind of dematerialize. They kind of poof like a smoke, like smoke. And I also just, my dad's an attorney, and I don't think they thought I was odd, but they didn't understand me at all. Like my mom said one time, how did I raise a child that I don't understand at all, and that was shocking to me because she had, experience with psychology, including Jungian psychology, but I realized that I alienated people too. I was so excited about this. I'm like, this is it. And people were really felt bad that they didn't weren't having that experience too. And I didn't realize that that was going to be have an impact, but that was my experience. And I think it's just wise to hold as much as you can,
Yeah. I can't remember. You're making me think of I can't remember if it was Khalil Gibran or Rilke who said that when we love somebody else, he's talking about romantic love, but when we love somebody, we want to give them everything about us. And that is like flinging a bunch of flowers at them.
Right.
And then, and actually, it's much more effective if you like compose them into a bouquet and you can hand them
That's
to
a
the person at the
brilliant
right time.
metaphor coming from a writer.
Well, as a poet, I think about this too, right? It's, you know, it's more effective. You can communicate more effectively if you can pause, think about what you want to say, and then compose something that accounts for the other person as well, and isn't just like, blah, here's everything that's in
Yeah,
my
that
heart.
is more close to your nature.
To be more reserved. Yeah, it's true.
Now, but now I've learned. I'm so proud of myself, you know, holding stuff, right? I'm like, wow, I'm a really good holder now. But it took a long time, and it was I
Yeah.
made a lot of mistakes. You know, you wonder how, you think that you are at least intelligent, but you make the same mistakes over and over and over for years, it seems to me. And then finally you go, okay, here is how it's going to get done. And then so did it change your writing? Like, was your writing more self-reflective, or
That's a really good question.
I mean, you have two different types of writing. I mean, you're writing for work.
I write for work, so a lot of the work that I do for, you know, is for tech companies and tech executives. I wouldn't say it's changed my writing there a lot, except for there is a way that it has. I think I've become much more tuned into the importance of human connection, of connecting both with the person that I'm writing for, but also helping them express, if they're open to it, some bit of their own personality
Great.
so that they can connect with the people that they're trying to reach. And Megan, it's not a, it's, you know, it's not like we're writing really emotional things here. We're writing things about, you know, robots and enterprise software and stuff. But even there, I think the ultimate goal of writing these pieces, whether it's a blog post or something on LinkedIn, is you want to connect with other
That's
humans,
right.
right? And so even if you're trying to sell enterprise software, you still need to connect with humans who make the decisions at the end of the day. And I think I've realized that's the value that I provide as a writer. I'm not just putting words on a page. If that's all it were, then an AI could replace me. What I'm actually doing is connecting with a person and helping them connect with the people they want to reach.
I bet they feel that too.
Yeah, maybe some of them do.
I mean, no, but they might not even know. You
Yeah.
know, it's like if there was some awareness or self-reflection, or,
Yeah.
there was probably be an understanding. And that's, but, people come back to you and back to you and back to you
Yeah.
because of that, partly because of that. Obviously, you can articulate things clearly, but
Yeah.
you
But I
can,
don't talk about it with them. I
no,
definitely wouldn't talk about it with them in that way.
no.
On my creative writing, I think it has enabled me to open up a new kind of vulnerability, a new kind of openness, to wonder, and it has shifted the way I think about writing for sure. You know, it also opened a door to a kind of writing that I do now, poetry, where I write poems for other people. It's
I
called
love that.
listener poetry, and it's through this outfit
I
called the Good
love that.
Listening Project. And what I do is I'll spend 20 or 25 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, just listening to a person and asking them questions. And then I will go away and write a poem for them about whatever they want.
That's beautiful. I'm going to do a 15-minute station ID. This is Inner Life on KMUN. I'm Megan McFeely, and I'm talking to Dylan Tweeny today about how his inner life found him. So, would you describe inner life? Because I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it's so vast, and
Yeah.
it's so, for everybody, it's different. It has all these elements, and compare it to the outer life.
So I think everyone has an inner life, but I'm not sure we all notice it all the time. So for me, the inner life has been about taking the time to slow down and sit, or to swim, or just to like hang out on the back deck and among the sunshine and the birds and the breeze, and notice what's happening inside me. And I want to say in my mind, but that's a little bit too intellectual. But noticing the thoughts and the feelings that are coming up, and noticing kind of how they emerge and how they stick around for a little while and then disappear.
It's
I think paying attention to that is like that's the beginning of inner life.
right.
For me, that's where I started to sort
Yep.
of see what's going on.
That's a great explanation of it. And silence is such an opener to this way of listening, you know,
Yes.
the capacity to be silent is so important to this. And do you,
And breathing too, like you said before, like really helps me get into that state where I can start to be a little bit more open to that silence. It's been really crucial.
And so from the silence comes all kinds of things, you know, like insights and awareness. And, you know, all of a sudden you figure out something you've been thinking about for a long time and you couldn't get it through the powering of the mind way, but you can get it from being silent and allowing. It's like this openness for allowing other inputs that we don't see or don't quite understand into the system, and make, you know, like you said, it's about awareness of that. And I know that I'm going to out you as a good dreamer. You have good dream. I mean, and I don't mean good in that they're, yay, Dylan, you've won, but you have dreams that are meaningful. And you know, a lot of people have dreams that are just, you know, regurgitating anxiety, or I mean, we all have those. But there are some people that have really incredibly symbolic dreams, and they tell you something about where you exist or who you are at a deeper level. And I'm not going to ask you to share a dream unless you really want to, but will you say something about that experience for you and learning what those might mean and how they impact you or change you?
I think for me, it's clear that sometimes dreams that I have just come from anxiety or being obsessed about work. I mean, I don't know. I dreamed last night that I was trying to drive a moving van around, and it's because I'm going to go help a friend who's moving tomorrow. R really clear that there's a connection there. But I think if you're gentle and open, gentle with your dreams and open to them, for me, if I write them down, this helps. Whether they're anxiety dreams or I can categorize them or not, sometimes I'll just write them down in the morning. Things start to emerge. Suddenly you're like, oh, maybe that is something important. And then more dreams start to come up when you're open to it. You remember them more, right? So I don't know. Sometimes that's incredibly comforting. I have seen my late father in dreams. I've met Thich Nhat Hanh in dreams, and I didn't meet him in real life. But sometimes it's just like you're saying, it's mysterious and symbolic, and you don't really know what it means. Like, I dreamed of
Well,
a silver coin, and what does that mean, Megan?
I would tell you what that means. But I was going to say that, you know, there's different types of dreams. And the Sufis say there's, you know, I'm not going to quote the Sufis verbatim, but there are dreams where you're having a direct experience. So, like if your dad shows up, you could interact with, or you hear something from him that he couldn't say during your life, or something that you need to know to settle something or to move on, or and for me that would be a direct experience. And then there's, you know, symbolic dreams where you have a dream of the Buddha, right? And that is what symbolizes your Buddha nature, or could symbolize your Buddha nature. So there's a, you have to when you start dreaming, I'm not great at dream analysis. I'm especially for myself. I'm better with other people because I can listen. When I listen, I can hear beyond my hearing at what is might be trying to come through. And you have to be very careful with that because you know, to give somebody something like that is inappropriate sometimes, you know. So you have to be discerning. But I don't have that capacity for myself. I have to have someone else help me with dreams. But I found it really powerfully, you know, a real powerful aspect of having my own, having an inner life, you know, and giving respect to it instead of just like, ah, oh, that was so crazy, you know, and but just saying, well, I wonder what that is. And to hold something like that, hold it inside yourself, like this holding again comes up, hold it inside yourself as though it were gold. And then maybe something about the meaning of it gets revealed to you. Do you do that? What, how do you do this?
I think that's a really good description, Megan. I just kind of hold it. I don't try to force meaning out of it. I think you know what you're saying? It often helps to talk about it with somebody else. Because even if you offer me an interpretation of my dream, then I'm like, huh, I don't think that's it, Megan.
Right. No, you
Something
have,
still emerges.
but you have
It's
to
like,
feel that. You have to be able to feel that.
yes,
I don't think that that's right. You
that's right.
know,
So I
that's
have to use that discernment too when I'm
yes.
listening to your interpretation, but it's still helpful. So there's some intersubjectivity there, I think, that's really helpful. You know, we don't talk about dreams a lot in Buddhism, but we do talk about it's called store consciousness, which is like we contain all these seeds of ideas and thoughts and feelings and impulses that we don't know about. It's like the unconscious.
That's right. That's right.
And I
We
think
do.
those things start to sprout and they start to grow in dreams, and you can learn a lot about what's going on inside you that way.
That's, I think so too. It's so sad that we have to start winding this down because we could
Already?
talk for it's yes. Is that insane? So, right now, Dylan, you are a content consultant and writing coach, and you have tiny words and list, you're a listener poet. And I want to give people your website in case they want to hear more about your work.
Of
It's
course.
dylantweeney.com and it's spelled DYLAN dot TWENEY dot com. So thank you so much for being here. I got to get an hour long show. You know what I'm saying?
I think
Thank
so.
you. And I want to thank everyone for joining us on Inner Life on KMUN in Astoria. We're here monthly, and you can find the podcast at KMUN.org.